Lake Effect continues on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Teich. The name T-Bone Burnett is almost synonymous with the word legendary. You could also use innovative, brilliant, and visionary. Burnett catapulted into the public consciousness with a soundtrack from the Coen Brothers film Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? But writer Lloyd Sack says Burnett had been hugely influential years before that movie came out, both as a producer and as a singer and songwriter in his own right.
Sack's new book, T-Bone Burnett, A Life in Pursuit, takes the reader from Burnett's early days in Fort Worth, Texas, through his current projects. And Sacks will be talking about it tomorrow night at Boswell Book Company. He joined us in the studio first, though, and said he first discovered Burnett as a singer-songwriter.
I first interviewed him, I don't know, years ago, I think when he was visiting Chicago for one of his shows. And he's just a great person to be around, really a fascinating person. And as the years went by, I just really, I did a long cover story about him for No Depression magazine. And belatedly, this book kind of grew out of that. I wanted to get deeper into his whole body of work. And really, I've been saying kind of on a sort of mission to make people aware that he is such an amazing songwriter, and that he's more than the guy who's producing, you know, people like Steven Tyler.
Right. And you really get into what feeds his songwriting. You talk about his faith. You talk about all of the influences, what was going on in Fort Worth, where he grew up at the time. And he was born in 1948. So we're talking about he was starting to play in the late 50s and really starting to do stuff in the 60s.
He was running his own recording studio before he was out of his teens. And he actually bought that studio and was producing people in this basement studio with kind of rudimentary equipment long before he ended up leaving town. And he went to Los Angeles and started poking around trying to make a career there.
And poking around with some amazing people. If you know anything about rock and roll history, I'm reading these names and I'm going, oh, he was with everybody. Everybody.
Yeah, it wouldn't be difficult to play a Six Degrees game with T-Bone. He really has rubbed up against so many artists in one way or another. Plus, the whole evolution of his style as an artist and as a producer. You mentioned his religious background. He's a really spiritual person, but in a very private way. A lot of people tagged him with the whole born again thing back in when he was appearing with Bob Dylan on the Rolling Thunder tour. Some people claim that he led Bob Dylan down the road to Christianity. He totally denies it. And there is a religious dimension in a lot of his work that really critics didn't pay much attention to. But it's clearly there. And even when it's not explicit, there's a very spiritual dimension to everything T-Bone does. There's a sense of that music itself is a kind of spiritual undertaking, that it's not just, you know, putting words and music together and trying to make a hit song, although he would dearly love to have had a few commercial successes. Most of his recordings actually all have not been commercially successful. But there's a real sense of spiritual drive in what he does. And not only as a recording artist, but as a producer and also as a kind of activist in railing against the whole digital industry. He really, really believes that the analog music that was being recorded, you know, back in the 50s hasn't been bettered.
Well, you talk a lot about how he has recreated spaces. Like, he wanted that sound. And so he would recreate something, or he would find a space and then mic it in a certain way that would allow him to try to get what he heard in his head or what he grew up with, like those analog sounds. And that it's something that, as you say, A Life in Pursuit, as the subtitle here, it's like he's constantly pursuing.
Yeah, he really is. He's not an artist who seems, at least, to be self-satisfied. There's always the next project and the next endeavor. And he really places a value on, you know, the experience of making music and also of kind of existing on this continuum. You know, the term roots artist, although it's kind of used a little bit less these days, Americana has taken its place, and T-Bone is really one of the godfathers of Americana. But he really believes that, you know, American music exists in this great big stream. Ken Burns, for example, when he did his jazz documentary, treated music, I don't know, before 1980 as, you know, historic, as museum pieces, rather than living, breathing, you know. And T-Bone thinks that all of that music in the past is still in the mix, and it's a matter of just really existing on that continuum and thriving on all this amazing music that exists.
He was able to pull from that river of music. He was able to pick and choose and meld it in ways, I think, that other people don't. Do you think the fact that he is such a good producer has overshadowed the fact that he's also such a good songwriter and musician in his own right? I mean, we'll get to Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, which is, of course, where he sort of catapulted into the national consciousness.
Right.
But so many people, they're good at one or the other, but they're not good at both.
That's true. There are very, very, very few. I mean, there are a bunch of singer-songwriters who've been producers and done very well. I don't think probably any of them have done as well at both as he has. You know, T-Bone, he kind of, in making his own recordings, he really shot himself in the foot, as his ex-wife Sam Phillips has actually said, because he was very self-conscious in making a bunch of those recordings, and he would continually tweet them in the studio and kind of get too busy with a lot of the way he did them. And the times when he just kind of stripped down to essentials, as on his great album simply titled T-Bone Burnett, which I think came out in 1986, which is his most country-ish album. People love that album, but, you know, it was so close to the bone. It was not a commercial success. And I think, you know, if he had had some commercial successes, he would be known as, you know, better as a singer and songwriter. But his success as a producer has been so enormous. I mean, he's launched so many artists from, you know, Los Lobos to the Wallflowers. He's produced Elvis Costello. He's produced just so many people that's how he became best known as the, you know, the producer with the Midas touch.
Right. It's like there's somebody that you quote in here, and I'm trying to remember now who it was, but said he hears things that other producers don't hear and hears things that you don't hear. And he's able to somehow get that out of you in the recording studio.
Yeah. You know, in the section about Los Lobos, his co-producer, Steve Berlin, who's a musician who actually became a member of Los Lobos and the Blasters as well, they didn't get along very well in the studio because Berlin, being a musician and a tough kid from the East Coast, really wanted to capture Los Lobos live and raw and in their element. And T-Bone recognized the fact that what sounds great in a, you know, in a club or a concert hall doesn't necessarily make for a really good studio recording. And he just heard something in them that, you know, Berlin wasn't hearing. And, you know, voila, their first album, Will the Wolf Survive, became, you know, a big critical hit. And then he produced the second one as well, which I think is maybe even a better album.
He's done that for so many people. And we have to talk about Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, because it's probably the soundtrack that most people in this country, if they're not into music and they're not listening to things all the time, they know this because it went everywhere. It's what put Ralph Stanley on the map outside of bluegrass circles.
That's for sure. And, you know, it sold like 8 million copies. Now, consider that it's not an album that was getting any airplay. Radio stations weren't playing that stuff by then. And he actually says, you know, the best airplay he got was in the movie theater where people, you know, went and saw the movie. You know, who would have thought that this mountain music, that this pre-bluegrass music, that the music of people like Doc Boggs, who, you know, contributed the song Oh Death that Ralph Stanley just knocked out of the park, you know, who would have thought that these artists would, you know, create this amazing platinum, multi-platinum, giga-platinum, I don't know what it was, album. It was an amazing thing. And yet the people who were involved in that recording said that T-Bone had no doubt that this thing was going to fly. I mean, he knew, and he knew that Ralph Stanley was going to become a household name.
And Dan Tominski, who, of course, plays with Alison Krauss in Union Station, Alison Krauss herself. Emmylou Harris was already on the map. A lot of people right. already knew who she was. But Gillian Welch, I mean, a lot of people that were on that soundtrack, if you were kind of in the folk and bluegrass and roots or whatever you wanted to call it, you knew those names. And you probably had albums of those people. But this is what, it kind of turned it into pop. He was able, in terms of sales and in terms of awareness, he was able to somehow shape all of that in a way that, you know, hadn't been done before.
Well, and as he says, he didn't record this as old-timey music. He used some of the technology of, you know, past eras, but he recorded it, he said, like a rock and roll album to capture this new kind of immediacy in the music. I mean, again, this whole notion of nostalgia, of you know, museumness, you know, this is not anything he's interested in. Because the music is breathing still right now in this moment. And he brings that kind of, you know, awareness to everything he does. I mean, someone else who did this music would have, you know, tried to make it, quote, authentic. So it sounded like the old records. And he just won't do that.
You obviously had to stop this in the present day. He's still working. He's still got lots going on. What do you think he's likely to be working on next?
I don't know. You know, he's been slowing down a bit on producing artists and, you know, producing albums. He's been more involved in bigger projects. And you know, I have to confess, I haven't checked in on this, but he was working on writing the words and music to a Broadway musical about Roy Rogers. And ironically, he replaced the Disney composer, Alan Menken, who dropped out, Walt Disney being one of T-Bone's most hated American, you know, celebrities, for reasons you'll have to read the book to find out. So that musical is on the horizon. And I just see that he also signed to do a TV series set in Miami. I think it's a crime series with his wife, Callie Curry, who was the creator of the TV show Nashville, which T-Bone supervised the music for the first season. And so they're working together on that. And, you know, I just think he really wants to branch out and do things he hasn't done before.
Has he read the book?
I don't know.
You haven't been in touch about that.
I ran into him in Nashville. The listeners should probably know that I've talked to T-Bone numerous times over the years and consider myself a friend on some levels. We've hung out a couple times, a few times. But T-Bone didn't want to participate in this book for reasons Sam Phillips believes he's just really kind of queasy about looking back at his life, the whole mortality thing. He ended up helping me get photographs for the book, and he was very generous in, you know, allowing me to talk to everyone around him, family and friends and artists he's been with for a long time. This is one artist. It's really pretty remarkable that T-Bone is still working with musicians that he worked with, you know, even in Fort Worth like 40 years ago. I mean, the loyalty factor is so strong. And also just knowing these people, you know, for who they are. Joe Henry, the singer-songwriter who's T-Bone's protege and who owes a lot to T-Bone and has become a producer himself in very much in the T-Bone vein, talked about how T-Bone doesn't pick musicians for his projects based only on their musical talent, but also on their character as people. He really wants to be surrounded by people who are, you know, just good, decent folk.
Who happen to have this great musical
talent.
Who also are
really great.
Yeah. Well, Lloyd Sachs, I want to thank you so much for coming up to talk about this. The book is called T-Bone Burnett, A Life in Pursuit. It is out now. And when are you at Boswell?
I will be there on Thursday, February 2nd at 7 o'clock. I'll be joined by the great local Milwaukee artist John Seeger, who I'm thrilled to have with me, and it'll be fun.
Thanks again so much for coming up.
Oh, thank you.
Lloyd Sachs lives and writes about popular culture in Chicago and elsewhere. He'll be at Boswell Book Company Thursday evening to talk about his new book, T-Bone Burnett, A Life in Pursuit.
And as we mentioned at the end of our interview, Milwaukee musician John Seeger will be there as well to play some music, including a tune he recently played for us here in the studio. Well, John Seeger, Happy New Year.
Thank you, Bonnie. Happy New Year to you.
You know, we've been doing this a year now.
That's really wonderful, isn't it?
It is. We were talking before we turned on the mics that you were walking over the frozen river, and that was the first song we did a year ago.
Yeah, I did it with Greg. Yeah. Greg Hawk.
Got a kind of a different group in today.
Yes, I do. I have this guys I found on the street called Semi-Twang. Two of them.
Different.
Okay. So meet Mike Seeger. I don't know.
Oh,
he looks familiar.
He does look familiar. Hey, Mike. Happy New Year.
How you doing? Thank you. Same to
you. And you are playing the bass?
I am.
Yeah.
And then over there on the Nashville high-strung guitar is the very high-strung Mike Hoffman.
Hey, Mike.
Always working on that.
Yeah. Well, this is a special kind of gig we're doing today because I asked you to do a specific song for this because this is kind of in honor of T-Bone Burnett. There's a book that's just come out about him, and this is a song that you wrote for the Bodines that T-Bone produced.
That's kind of, I wrote kind it for of, me. Sorta? I write everything for me, but they liked the song and they rejiggered it and had a very different version on their record. And it was a good version. And
how long ago was this?
Oh, their record came out in like 85.
So it's 32 years ago. Yeah,
and this was about when Semi-Twang was getting up and running around that time. And I really think this is the first song I wrote with Semi-Twang in mind. And T-Bone was one of the producers that we were talking to at the time, too. And he's a wonderful guy, very smart guy.
Yeah.
And I have a quote I've never forgotten of his, and it's, "Generosity is the hallmark of a true artist," which I think is a cool thing to say.
Well, what is this song?
This song is called The Strangest Kind.
All right. Well, let's hear it.
Okay. Well, I had a man of love, it's like a memory. Yeah, I had a man of love, it's like a dream. Said I had a man of love, that's always fighting. It's the strangest kind that you ever see. It's the strangest kind that you ever seen. Well, I heard about love that never quits now. And I heard about love run out of steam. Yeah, I heard about love can't stop. It's the strangest kind that you ever seen. It's the strangest kind that you ever seen. Well, there's a love that flashes like lightning. There's a love so strong that it's frightening.
John Seeger and part of Semi Twang performing John's song The Strangest Kind, which was recorded by the Bodines on their 1986 album Love and Hope and Sex and Dreams, and which was produced by T-Bone Burnett. See, it all does circle back around.